everybody. My name is Allison. I'll call it. My sobriety date is August 5th, 2001. My home group's Midtown Group, and in and around Washington, D.C. And I have a sponsor. I've had the same sponsor since my very first meeting. And thanks for asking me to come and speak. This is a real honor to do anything in AA. And I'm going to tell you guys in a general way what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I'm a born and raised Washingtonian. I grew up on Capitol Hill. My parents were high school sweethearts. They, you know, met at church in high school, went to college together, got married, got jobs in D.C., moved out there, bought a house, raised three kids, and that's how it's always been. They're still together, in the same house, raised all three kids in the same house, you know, like upper middle class family, stable government jobs, no calamity or craziness to speak of, you know? And so I had this, like, ideal upbringing. I didn't, you know, my parents don't drink. My dad now makes wine, but he didn't do that until I got sober, oddly enough. I wasn't around alcohol. I didn't have any, like, idea of what alcoholism was or any of that, you know. It wasn't a factor in my life. And I was pretty normal in some respects and not in others. I did well in school, but I couldn't, maintain social relationships with people, you know. I had two sisters, and I'm the middle child, you know, and all fairly close in age, and we would all play in the backyard sometimes and have normal, like, playing and stuff like that, and then other times I'd just isolate and sit in the basement and play Monopoly by myself with my stuffed animals, you know, and that's kind of weird. They'd be like, do you want to go play? And I'm like, no, I'm busy, you know, and so I'd have this, like, I would isolate a lot, and I would hide from people. And sometimes I had some friends, you know, but I really liked to sort of stay in myself. And I did well in school, but didn't have friends at school, and got beat up a lot. And but I always had this kind of I'm going to get over on people thing. And I used to get, because I did well in spelling classes, we would, you know, they'd say, like, you know, eight words. You have to write them down, how to spell them. And so we always did everything in pencil. And I'd write in pencil and misspell everything terribly. And then some kid next to me would strong-arm me and be like, give me that, and take my my paper and would copy them all down. So, and then slide it back to me, like, as if, you know, hey, thanks for the help. And I would say, sure, you're welcome, and erase all of them and write them on properly and hand it in, you know what I mean? So I got beat up a lot, you know, like that, you know, being a smart ass. And I definitely have always been a smart ass. But I ended up, you know, like, I don't remember, well, I don't remember, like, my first, like, anything, like, my first memories of, like, drinking or anything, you know. I'm sure it was probably my parents' church potluck dinners and people would have wine or something like that, you know. But I do remember my first drunk, and that was very different place. I was in Mexico on a family vacation. I was 12, about to be 13, like a month later in the summer, and we'd all driven down to Mexico, and we were in this little town south of Mexico City, staying in this little hotel, and I was with my family, my older sister, who was, you know, 4 years older than me, so she was in high school. Her boyfriend came along, and we met these random, like, group of college students from Oregon who happened to be in our hotel. And so, you know, my older sister and her boyfriend made friends with them, and I'm tagging along. And they have this huge jug of tequila. You know, it's got a handle on it, it's got a worm in it, and I was like, this is so cool, you know? Because I had been drawn to drinking from movies. I saw Trainspotting earlier that year, and I thought it was very, very cool. It made heroin, like, thought, look really good. It doesn't, actually, but I totally thought that it did, you know, and I thought I definitely needed to try that, you know, and I had been drawn to movies and people are drinking, and I thought, it's very, very cool, you know, I want to try that stuff, too, and I was just excited to do this stuff, you know, and so when it got brought up, there wasn't any say no to drugs, I should really not do that, my parents are counting on me, or any of this kind of crap. I was like, yes, you know what I mean? And they handed me a shot of tequila, and I drank it, and then they handed me, like, Sunny Delight, not like orange juice, it's just not really a big thing for me, And I said, I'm good, no, no thanks. And they insisted I drink it, and I asked why, and they said, well, it's a chaser. It gets the taste out of your mouth after you drink alcohol. And I thought, and I said to them, I said, why would I do that? You have this whole jug of tequila. Give me another shot. You know what I mean? Like, we're not done here. And I didn't compute, like, why I would have one shot, and then there's plenty more, and then I'd stop. You know what I mean? It's like one bite of dinner. I'm not full. You know what I mean? And so I kept going, and we went out. We had a couple more shots, and I smoked some pot with these kids, and my sister dressed me up in, like, 5-inch stiletto heels, and we went out on the cobblestone streets to this bar, and we were dancing, and I mean, I don't know why I didn't buy my own beers, but I, like, intuitively knew to pick up everybody else's and shake them and drink it if there's anything in it, you know. And I just thought it seemed the best way to do it, and it saved money. And they could, let's say, serve you, you know. If you can put money out on the counter, they'll give you alcohol in that bar. But, you know, I just started picking up everybody else's. My sister came over. This guy was talking to me, this older Mexican man, and I didn't understand what he was saying to me, and he was trying to get me to come with him, and I was like, no, 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 leave me alone. And my sister came over and yelled at him and was like, leave her alone, and said, grab your beer, come on. And we went to the other side of the bar, and I was excited. Oh, okay. So we go over there, and she grabbed my beer, and she smelled it and said, that has cigarette butts in it. And I was like, so? There's more beer than cigarette, but I smoke. You know what I mean? Like, that's okay. And, because I already had started smoking by then. So I was like, that's fine, you know. And she kind of curled her nose at me and was like, whatever, you know. But I had a wonderful time that night. You know, I learned how to drink. I learned how to dance. I was dancing with these, like, 22-year-old college guys, and I was having a wonderful time, you know. And I just felt like this was something I want to do more of. This is something that I really need, you know, because before that I had always felt this kind of, like, I actually would, like, look through my parents' room looking for, like, adoption papers, and I thought, now my sisters were both born, like, with lighter colored hair and skinny, and I was, like, chubby with, like, darker hair, and I was like, I'm adopted, like, there's, the aliens dropped me off, like, I thought everybody else is sort of more well-adjusted, they're more social, they're able to, you know, sort of deal with things better than I can, and so there must be there's a disconnect somewhere, and I don't know what it is. And when I started drinking, that disconnect, it, like, connected the piece, you know what I mean? Like, that chromosome I was missing was filled with alcohol, or whatever it was that I felt like was wrong. And so, if people describe it as that God-sized hole gets filled up, you know, and I was like, this is awesome, you know what I mean? I felt like this is what I need to do all the time. And so I did. Because the thing is what makes me alcoholic isn't the fact that I went out when I was almost 13 and got drunk with my older sister and had a great time and danced with boys. That's not, that plenty of people do that. What makes me alcoholic is the fact that I woke up the next morning and we started driving home from Mexico and I wanted to drink. You know what I mean? I went home to my friends and I preached the gospel. We need to get drunk. I had this wonderful experience, and this has got to happen. And so my parents didn't drink. And so we had a hard time, you know, to find out whose parents drank, and you're my new friend, and let's go over, you know. And we made circuits of, like, friends' houses to go and drink at, and made circuits of 7-Elevens to rob, and it worked out, you know. And we go in and stuff 40s down our pants, and I distract the, you know, guy with questions about the beef jerky or whatever was on the counter, you know what I mean? And then my friends would go out running out the door with 40, and we'd go drink on the train tracks. And we'd sit, this was my weekends, the, you know, big weekends, we'd sit on the train tracks in, right in the suburb outside of D.C. And we'd cross the tracks, sit on the other side on this ledge that I like to sit on the ledge, and my feet would dangle down, and below me is a major Route 50. Underneath the and above, underneath the bridge that the train tracks are on, and I throw my beer cans down on the cars and I try to hit them, and you know, and I just thought this was great, you know, and I wasn't concerned about it until my, like, every now and then I get worried because people, my drinking friends would try to put their arms, like, through the wheels of the train when it would go by. And that was a little unnerving. But other than that, I didn't think there was any problem drinking on railroad tracks. And, you know, but that's what I wanted to do, and I did it every day. I actually, that was my weekends. During the week, I had another group of friends that I went to junior high with, and we'd get drunk every single day at 3:15, you know. Because that year, I started junior high, started a new school, I made new friends, like my first day, there's a liquor store conveniently located a block from the school, you know, we'd get people to buy us alcohol, and we'd go out and drink, and I needed a $5 every day that my mom gave me for lunch, and I'd take that, I wouldn't eat lunch, I don't know what I did for lunch, but I would just go and get a 40 and a pack of Marlboro Reds, and drink, and smoke, and that's my afternoons, you know, that's all I wanted to do, and it made me supremely happy, and I went, I got away with it for a while, because I was a latchkey kid, so my parents were still at work till like 7, so I had a couple hours to myself, and I would go out and drink, I'd come home, and I'd do my homework, you know what I mean, and I'd sort of, I wouldn't be terribly drunk when my parents would get home, and so, you know, but I loved it, you know, and I thought, this is, I'm going to have to do this all the time, you know, and I started, but really quickly, I started, like, having to do more. And I started drinking in school. I started drinking, like, in class. And I didn't think, I always thought I ever drank in class, but I had this perfume atomizer you just fill with perfume, a little travel thing. You could always wear your perfume, spray it on you. And I filled it with vodka and sprayed it in my mouth all the time. It never had perfume in it to begin with, but it just, I would put vodka in it and spray it in my mouth during class because I assumed vodka is clear, therefore odorless, which is not true, but I thought it was, you know, and I liked clear liquors, like grain alcohol. I'd go to my friend's apartment after school, when we were 13, like, and we'd go to go drink this, like, jug of grain alcohol that his mom had. We'd just drink it out of the bottle, and I'd go stand on the ledge overlooking, like, a major road in D.C., like, many stories up from this apartment building, like yelling at the people on the street, you know, and I thought, this is great, you know, I mean, this is what I always want to do. So I had all this fun and excitement and this, like, relief from drinking, you know, and it really, really quickly became, I need to drink. Like, almost immediately it was, I need to drink, we got to go get drunk, when are we going to do this? And it was planning and coordinating and constantly, like, manipulating situations so that I'd be getting drunk, you know. It became the constant denominator in my life. Everything started to revolve around drinking. And that's really what makes me alcoholic. Everything in me changed once I started drinking, you know. My relationship with alcohol is very different than a non-alcoholic. You know, once I started drinking, I was immediately obsessed with it. Once I physically started drinking, I couldn't stop. I just drank, and I was a blackout drinker from the very beginning. And I had no idea what I did, what I said, the people I met. People would stop me on the street and talk with me. I'd apparently been partying with them the night before. I didn't know who they were. You know, I still have lots of people that come into meetings that know me. I don't know who they are. They're vaguely familiar, you know, and a lot of stories that I don't remember, you know, things like that. And I just was like, whatever, you know, it's, that means I just had a really good time. And, you know, and I started, I did pass out one time. I was at a party where I knew nobody except for a guy I used to date who now is dating somebody else, and the three other girls at the party were all embroiled in some drama with him and his current girlfriend. And then there's all these guys, and this other guy that I had thrown up on his floor from smoking too much pot. So that was my, like, deep connections with people. And we went out. I went out to this party. They met on a liquor run. And I said, just get me some vodka. So they brought back a bottle of Smirnoff, like, this big. Like, I don't know what size it is, but they brought it back, and I didn't hand anybody any money. I just picked it up and was like, thanks, and walked off. And I drank it all in, like, 45 minutes. And I was 13. I weighed a little over 100 pounds, you know, and this summer party, I didn't know anybody there, and I passed out. I, like, literally fell on the floor. But before that, I gave two guys shots, and I felt like Mother Teresa, you know, and we make friends. We all bonded over this band, and, like, nobody knew at the time except for us, so we thought we were very, very cool because of that. And so I fell on the ground and passed out, and then the rest of the night's, like, bits and pieces, you know. And I should have had alcohol poisoning, but I didn't. I almost was raped that night, but I wasn't. I don't remember a lot of what happened except for the little bits and pieces. that I woke up for, like walking up the stairs and smacking my head into the walls because I can't stand up straight, and then everything goes black, you know, standing, and then I'm on the ground, and then everything goes black, you know, and I just, and I remember crawling out of the, they put me in this other room to sort of get me out of the way of everybody in a bedroom so I could lie down. I asked for water, and I spilled it all over myself, and then finally at one point I woke up, and there's like people passed out on the ground around me. A couple guys that I'd made friends with threw some punches to help me out. And I didn't know what had happened. And I, you know, somebody gave me a ride to the metro, and I metroed home, and I went to bed and thought nothing of it. And then this guy calls me the next day that I don't know who he is. I don't know what's going on. And he tells me what happened. He's terribly worried. Are you okay? What's going on? And I'm like, what? Why are you worried? You know, I was like, I'm just out drinking. And that's sort of comes with the territory. You know what I mean? Like, it's fine. And I would, you know, and I got used to that. I'd come home, and I'd wake up in the morning and check. What do I have? Do you know what I mean? Do I have my wallet? Do I have my cigarettes? And I'd look in the mirror. Am I majorly cut and bruised? Did I do that myself, or was that already there? Like, what happened? You know, check my purse. Did I come home with everything? And so I was like, all right, you know, and I got used to that. You know, you wake up, and you don't open your eyes, you listen first. You know, think, where am I? Am I at home? Am I at someone's house? You know, like, what's going on, you know? And I had just gotten used to that sort of unease, you know? And, I mean, I just, I don't know, it just never really bothered me that much, you know? And, but I was concerned that other people thought that I should be bothered. So I thought I should try to regulate this, and maybe it's not a good idea to drink that much in public. So, well, at a party with people I don't know. So I thought, well, you know, my friends had started getting into, I mean, I like dabbled in just about every drug that's out there, aside from acid, which is a good thing, honestly, because I would have just flipped out. But I was taking, my friends had started taking these prescription pills and speed and stuff like that, and I started using that to regulate my drinking. You know, and I didn't really see it at the time, but I remember telling myself, like, I gotta fix this, because straight drinking, bad things are happening, and so I need to fix this problem, you know, and so when I took that, I could see better, I wouldn't get so blurry visioned, I could walk better, I wouldn't slur my speech, I wouldn't walk into door frames, I would actually get through the door, you know, and I thought, this is all really good stuff, and now later I learned that'll just give you a heart attack, like mixing those two things, but it was literally what I did every day for like 3 years, you know, and so I just, that became a normal part of my life. I would take these pills all day, and I'd drink with it, you know, and I started doing it in school. I started drinking, like, to get myself to sleep, you know, and I would get in trouble. I started getting in trouble, like, my grades had always, I'd always been an A and B student, and then, like, one class I showed up with a D or an F, and my mom was really, really upset. And I tried to blame it on the teacher, she's been out all year, but I'm constantly getting dragged in the principal's office, constantly getting in trouble, and they're like, what's going on with you? And so I was constantly getting grounded, you know, and I was like, I need to figure something out. And now, my older sister grew up in the same environment as me, same genetics, everything. She had drank a lot in high school, in her first couple years of high school, you know, and smoked some pot and went out and partied with some kind of people from the wrong side of the tracks or whatever, got her into some bad stuff or whatever. She could blame it on them. When she got in trouble, she got, you know, threatened with, you're in major trouble, you're going to have to quit your after-school job, you're not going to get into college. She straightened up and flew right, finished high school, went to college. She drinks, but she doesn't have the same kind of consequences like that, you know. And me, I had that, and I was like, I need to find a solution here that'll work for me. So I started doing my homework at lunch, and then I just go out and drink all afternoon. And then I come home, take some more speed, and stay up all night and finish the rest of it, you know. I quickly stopped sleeping. I stopped eating. I got really, really sick, and, like, really, really fast. I only drank for, like, 3.5 years, and I got really sick really fast. You know, I would not be able to, like, leave the house, you know, if I wasn't going to go and get something or I already had something in my system, you know. I wouldn't go and visit my friends if we weren't going to get drunk. I would go to school and, like, buy some drugs off somebody and then come home, You know, if I had liquor when I woke up, I probably wasn't going anywhere, you know. I started to become pretty antisocial, and the reason for that was a lot of my friends didn't want me around. I'm like a good starter. I'm good with making people think I'm funny, and I'll go out to the party and, you know, dazzle people with my funny wit, and then they're not interested in seeing me drunk and puking on their floor and hitting on their boyfriend and going through their purse and stealing their money or their drugs. They're not interested in any of that, you know. They don't want me picking a fight with them. They don't want me hitting them. They don't want any of this stuff, you know what I mean? And so sometimes I'd remember that I did that. Sometimes I wouldn't, you know. And I'd go out Friday night with one group of friends, get trashed, come home, wake up. All right, let's go get loaded. Let's make a plan. And I'd call them. The same people, and they wouldn't return any of my calls. You know, and I didn't understand what had happened, and somebody would finally say, so-and-so's mad at you because you did this. And I said, oh, well, that's really not that bad, and they're just overreacting, or, oh, really, I had no idea that I did that, you know? And so I had to make a lot of different groups of friends so I could go out drinking every night, you know, with different people. So, and eventually I just ended up drinking a lot by myself, you know what I mean? And so I, what happened to me is that I ended up, I got really, really sick, like physically sick. I had this friend, who oddly enough didn't really drink much, and he was like big into death metal, and so we'd go to all these death metal concerts. And so, because I was a metalhead too, but I wasn't in death metal, and so he turned me on this, and we're going out to all these concerts in the area. And he always drove, which I liked, because I couldn't drive. But he didn't really drink as much as I did. So I'd sit in the car and give him directions, and I'd say, turn right, turn left. I'd point the wrong direction, I'd give him the wrong direction. He just learned not to listen to what I said, follow the hand movement, you know what I mean? That's my house. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, and so he would take me out and about, and we'd do all sorts of things, and we went out to these, we're out at this, club one night, and, we're talking to the band that he knows, and we're, like, getting interviewed by this fanzine, this, like, local fanzine, and they're, like, big in that, like, music scene, and, getting our pictures taken, and I thought, this is so awesome, because my, like, life goal at that point was to be a rock star, and I thought, this is moving me right along. I'm good to go, you know, and so I, you know, thought this is great, and so I went to the bathroom, excused myself politely, went to the bathroom, snorted a couple more lines, and then threw up blood in the toilet, and I thought, you're not supposed to do that, you know what I mean, like, that's not a normal, healthy reaction to anything, honestly, you know what I mean, so it means, like, I'm sick and dying, you know, and so there's something really wrong here, and now I had been going to doctors. I'd been seeing a shrink for years, you know, because my parents were trying to figure out what was wrong with me, and they couldn't pin it, you know, and my dad's clinically depressed, and now what he has is fixed by medicine very easily, you know, and that's not my case for me, but they thought maybe we'll try this. I went to family therapy. It didn't work, and because I would go, I'd always go drunk and high to all my therapy sessions and just fight with my parents, you know, and so I'd go to this, I just went to a psychiatrist, and they were trying to figure out what's wrong with me, and I'm not telling them a damn thing, you know what I mean, because I know they're going to lock me up, and they're going to try to stop me from drinking, and I figure, yeah, maybe there's something wrong with me, but I'm just going to medicate it myself, and I don't really know what it is, but I had a suspicion I was just crazy, and so, like, general craziness, like, not any specific reason, just generally crazy, and so I was afraid to tell anybody that, you know, because I knew I was a danger to myself and others. I was well aware of that fact. I just didn't want to get locked up in a psych ward because I figured I'd never come out, you know. They'd, like, put me on word for the criminally insane or something like that, and I was just, like, uninterested in doing that, and I got, like, emotionally and, like, physically very ill, you know. Like, physically, my parents started sending me, they sent me to psychiatrists, they sent me to doctors, because I wasn't eating, I lost a lot of weight, I got really, really skinny, my skin was, like, translucent, because I never really went out in the sun, and so they'd send me to the doctors to try to figure out what was wrong with me, and they'd say, you don't eat enough to sustain a gerbil, we're going to throw you in the hospital, like, they thought, I'm just anorexic, that's a problem, and I thought, no, I'm doing all this speed and not sleeping or eating, that's the problem, but I'm not going to tell them that, because then they'll get in trouble, so I go along with it, oh, yeah, I got a problem, you know, and then they said, they ran blood tests on me and trying to figure out what's wrong with me, and they said, your liver enzymes are coming up really weird, you know, like, what's wrong with your liver? And I'm like, I have no idea, you know, I couldn't tell you why. And, you know, and I'd go to the doctor, like, after just having snorted speed and walk in the door, and they'd take my blood pressure, and they'd freak out, like, you're having a heart attack. And I'm like, no, and I try to explain it. I just ran up 3 flights of stairs and smoked a cigarette on the way, and, you know, it's just jogging a lot, and I don't know, I just have to make stuff up. And so I started trying to, you know, because I couldn't not do it. There was no, like, let's not get drunk before going to therapy. It just wasn't going to happen, you know what I mean? Like, let's not take drugs before you get your blood pressure taken. It wasn't going to happen, you know? It was really an everyday part of my life. It wasn't, like, people just never saw me sober for, like, you know, for 3.5 years. And so if I happened to be, I just wasn't going to leave the house, you know? And, because why would I do that? And so I got, they were trying to figure out what's wrong with me physically and like emotionally, I was just a mess. And that's really what brought me to my knees, because I was afraid I was going to kill myself and kill other people. And I was well aware of killing myself, and I figured that's fine. I knew what I was doing and the way that I was living. I was going to die before I turned 20, and I was totally okay with that, you know. And part of me, I was like, you know, I tried to kill one of my friends when I was drunk, and I was a little embarrassed and afraid of that, you know, and I thought I don't want to do this stuff, you know what I mean? All the, like, fun and excitement and, like, looseness and, like, camaraderie that drinking gave me, like, turned really quickly, and it says in the big book, it turned like a boomerang on us, and that's exactly what happened. Just one day it snapped. And it's like the peace that came with drinking became shorter and shorter and shorter, you know. And so it ended up, I'd have like a 10 or 15 minute like bliss period, and then I'd need more, and I'd need more, and I'd need more, because I couldn't get back to it, you know. And my head would, you know, jump in and start talking to me about, oh, you're such a piece of shit, and you did this, and you did that, and these people don't want to talk to you, and blah, 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 you know. And I couldn't discern like my reality from like what was just going on in my head, and I was afraid all the time, you know. And I knew I'm just a social misfit. I can't be on the metro. I can't be out in public, like walking the streets with people. Because I'd be on the metro, because now I ride the metro to work, and I'm on the metro train at 5:30 on my way home, and I would sit there and I think, I used to be the like drunk goth girl who's sitting on the train, like screaming at everybody else on the train, and then I'd run off the train and puke over the side of the metro. You know what I mean? That's what I did, you know. And I thought, I always just was a misfit everywhere, and I just felt even more disconnected now, though. But I couldn't not drink. I figured I just got to make it, find a solution. And the solution never was stop doing this drinking stuff. It was something else is the problem, you know. And I couldn't quite get it. And I was, I started actively trying to commit suicide. I was thinking about it a lot. I wanted to jump in front of the metro train, but that's like really finite. You know what I mean? Like, there's no like, whoops, I don't want to do this. You're already there. And so, you know, the first few times, I guess I wasn't really as interested in it, you know. I cut myself a lot, you know, and I had a lot of pain. I didn't know what it was from. I didn't understand that I was, like, living with alcoholism. I didn't understand, but I cut myself. I slit my wrists a lot. I actually slit my wrists in public, which is, like, terribly disturbing to other people around you, but I did that, and I tried to choke myself, which doesn't work. Gravity works against you. A dog choke chain isn't long enough to do so, and I passed out, and my hand fell, and I came back to you, and I thought, shit, you know, and I went back to bed. You know, I was like, I don't know, you know, I can't do this. I tried to bleed myself to death, and it doesn't work, because it really takes a lot of effort to do that, and when you're drunk, you can't slit your wrist very well, because you don't understand how deep it's going. And I was, like, really interested in doing this, you know, and I overdosed a couple times. Sometimes I was just guinea pigging drugs, and one time I lost my vision for a few minutes, and that freaked me out, because I didn't just want to be blind and then, like, a drunk, you know what I mean? So I was like, I'm not going to do that, but you know, I had a few, like, I just lying in bed thinking, I'm going to die, you know what I mean? Like, I did too much, I drank too much, I'm going to die, you know? And I just lie in bed and think that there'd be some fear there, and there'd be some, like, acceptance there, you know, because that's the place that I was in, you know? And I had started, drinking non, like, regular alcoholic drinks. And I started drinking NyQuil and liquid Tylenol, because they're in my house, and they have a lot of alcohol in them. So I was drinking those when I was trying to get to bed, you know, because I'd run out, and the only, like, the last refuge was, I gotta go to sleep. That's all I have left, is if I can go to sleep, I'll be okay. If I can just get wasted, I'll be okay, you know, and, but I usually would run out way before I could, you know, be okay, and so I'd spend the whole night up thinking, you know, and, you know, but I was just trying to get to sleep. That's what I was telling myself, you know, and I sat in the bathroom, and I sat on the floor and opened, like, the cabinet under the sink and got out a bottle of NyQuil and a bottle of Tylenol, and they were full, and I drank both of them, and I thought, I'm really not feeling very well, you know, and if I die, then it's just a really long sleep, and that's okay, you know, and so I passed out on the bathroom floor, and, like, my head, I passed out, and I hit my head on the door behind me, which hit the tub, and I don't know if that was loud enough to wake my dad up, but his bladder saved my life, because he needed to pee, and my parents had bought this, like, you know, turn-of-last-century townhouse in, or row house in D.C., and they didn't have master bathrooms then. If my parents had a master bathroom, you'd have a different speaker. So he had to come down the hall to the bathroom that I was in. And I was, like, passing out. I was, like, half conscious. You know, I couldn't see. I'm lying on the floor, and I couldn't move. And I kind of opened one eye and looked at him, and I said, please don't step on me. And he freaked out, you know. Turn the lights on, get my mom, get poison control on the phone. He sees the two empty bottles, and he's like, oh, my God. And I was, I think, 14 or 15. You know, and he was just like, oh, my God, like, what are we going to do? And so they rushed me to the hospital, and I immediately I started throwing it all up, which saved me, really. They rushed me to the hospital, though, and they kept drawing my blood all night and most of the next day to check my levels to make sure I wasn't going to have, like, liver failure, because that much Tylenol will do that to you. And so they're like, you're so lucky to be alive, you're so lucky, and all these doctors come in, you're so lucky, are you okay, how are you feeling, da-da-da. And I'm like, I just want to go home. I'm supposed to meet my friends. And if I'm not dead, I should at least be there getting drunk. You know what I mean? And so I was just trying to get out of there. They wanted me to, like, pee in a cup for them to make sure I wasn't on anything. And I was like, I'm going to get busted, you know. And I tried to not do it, you know. And finally I did and left. And I had to talk to two psychiatrists and explain that this was a really big accident. There's not a big problem here. You know, just backpedal out of it. You know, what did you do? I can't explain it. I don't really know why I did it, but I did it. Can't you just accept that? And they're like, no. And so I said I'd go to the doctor. I'd go to more therapy. I'd, you know, get on medication. I'd do all these things that are supposed to fix you. You know, and it doesn't fix alcoholism. And they had no idea that that's what they were dealing with. And neither did I. You know, well, I knew that there was something different, but I didn't know what it was. And so I went to the doctors, and I did all this stuff, and I got on medication, and I thought, fine, whatever. And I knew, like, deep down, I knew this isn't my problem, and I never bought into it. I was like, whatever, I know this isn't the problem. So I just kept doing what I was doing, you know, and I overdosed again a couple of months later, and I ended up back in the same hospital. And I wasn't that sick this time. I had just drank a bottle of Benadryl, which just makes you really lethargic, you know? You pass out, like, at random. But it's not really going to kill you. But I was worried because I had this, like, moment. I'm, like, sitting on my room, on my bed, which is still made because I, like, never slept, you know? And I was sitting on my bed, and the sun's coming up, and it's, like, 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and the birds are chirping, and it's yet another day. I haven't slept, and I'm still messed up. And the birds are chirping. It's a lovely day for everybody else, and I just want to die, you know? And I had so many mornings like that. And I was just like, I can't do this. And I had my door open for some random reason. My mom walked down the hall and passed me and didn't see me and went to the bathroom. And she walked back down, and my mouth opened, and I said, Mom, I think there's something wrong. And she came in and saw what state I was in, took me to the hospital. And that, you know, began my adventures trying to get sober. I ended up, they put me in a psych ward, which I was really unhappy about, you know, because I was afraid I'd never get out. And so I had this, like, long, drawn-out battle in the hospital, like, hallways, screaming and crying, and we'll have family dinner, and it'll be okay, and I'll be different, and this will change, and, you know, I'll be your daughter again, and this won't have to continue, you know, and part of me really wanted that, and part of me knew it wasn't really possible, but I was just gonna try again, you know, and so, finally, you know, my dad said it was the hardest decision ever, you know, that he ever had to make in his life, you know, whether he's going to put his daughter in the psych ward and hope for the best, you know, or, like, let her come home and really believe her, because he wanted to, you know. And so they put me in the psych ward, and I sat in the quiet room, which is the padded room, but it wasn't padded. And I sat in there for a couple of days in solitary confinement, and they had to watch me and make sure, see what I was going to do. And I, by this time, had been pulling my hair out for about a year. I had trichotillomania, which is an OCD thing I developed because of my drinking. And if I was drinking, if I was drunk, I didn't touch my hair. If I wasn't, I pulled it out. So I literally sobriety baby pull my hair out. And I had long, like, jet black hair with these monstrous bald spots all over. My part was, like, an inch wide, and it started to grow in, so I had a little mohawk, you know what I mean? And I had these, like, bald spots all over my head that were, like, a couple inches in diameter. I had to, like, very carefully clip my hair back into a ponytail so nobody saw it, you know? But I couldn't stop doing it. There was no way. My mother would try to put gloves on me, and I'd pull my hair out, you know what I mean? I was just trying to hurt myself, and I couldn't stop doing it. And I felt like I had no control over my body, no control over my drinking, no control over my emotions. I just was a mess. And so I'm in the hospital, and I slept on this gym mat for a couple nights. And, you know, during the day, you know, they had cameras that were watching you, and the nurse's station's, like, right behind you. So I'm screaming at them, freaking out, you know, and trying to say anything I can, you know, trying to manipulate them, lying to them, like, trying to say whatever, cursing them, screaming at them, you know, threatening to kill them, which won't get you out of the psych ward. And so I was, like, trying to do everything I could think of, and I just sat there and shook and sweated and started detoxing, you know, and I thought really, like, staring at these, like, big concrete bricks, you know, and I'm thinking, how hard do you have to hit your head into this so that I can crack my skull open and die instantly? Because if I don't die instantly, they'll save me, because unfortunately I'm in a hospital, you know? And I'm really bad with physics, and so I couldn't figure it out. So I just sat there and cried, you know, and detoxed. And it was my second detox ever, you know, like a year before that, after I started vomiting blood, I thought, I should try to get myself sober. It's the drugs. I'll drink, because that's not making me throw up blood, but I'm going to get off this other stuff. And so I went on a family vacation to West Virginia for a week to detox myself. Nobody else knew that I was going to do that. And so I, you know, used up everything I had and then went on this vacation with them. We were camping, like, in a state park in this little cabin. And I didn't have a car to get anywhere. There was no booze. There was no nothing. And so I slept and I shook and I ate grilled cheese sandwiches and smoked Marlboro Reds and, you know, sure a joy to be around, you know. And then I came back and went right back to doing the same thing, you know. I just switched out the drug, and I thought, well, it's different this time, you know what I mean? And I went right back to drinking, you know. I made new friends and thought, this will be different, and nothing ever changed, you know. And then a year later, I'm detoxing again, and I was just afraid, because I didn't know what was going to happen, you know what I mean? And I didn't want what I had before, because obviously I had done that before. I detoxed and then gone right back to drinking, and it ended up in the same spot and worse. And I didn't want that again. And so, but I didn't know what else there was. It was like, you know, it was just, my only options were to keep drinking and keep feeling the way that I was feeling, or to not drink and just kill myself, you know. And I didn't really have an option, you know, because I couldn't not drink, you know. And so I just kept trying to think, brain, think, you know, you'll get out of this, and you'll figure it out, you know. And and 2 weeks later, I got out of the psych ward, and they had recommended I go to outpatient rehab, and I don't remember a damn thing about rehab. I just sat there for an hour or so a day, and my sponsor would pick me up and take me to meetings, because I was just toxic, you know. I didn't understand what was going on around me, you know. But this, I came back to school after being in the psych ward for 2 weeks, and this girl, we weren't friends. She she liked Britney Spears and I liked Marilyn Manson. We didn't get along really, but we had a class together and we were in a really, really small school. And so she knew me, and she knew she could put two and two together. She had 9 months sober in AA, and she put two and two together and was like, "You're in rehab, right?" You know, and I was like, "I have to go, yeah." And she's like, "Well, you're going to need to go to meetings, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so she said, "Well, come to a meeting with me." And she brought me to Midtown, my home group. And that was my very first meeting. And it's a huge meeting. And at the time, there was like 200-something people. And now it's even bigger. But I walked in, and I don't remember how I got there or anything. And my first year of sobriety is really patchy. But, you know, I went in, I sat, and I, like, stood up against the wall and tried to be cool and survey everybody. And she came up and said, "Here's your seat," and sat me down. So I just sat there. We were, like, an hour before the meeting started, but I had no idea. And I'm just sitting there. And this woman was sitting in front of me, and she turned around. She was talking to somebody else and turned around and started talking to me. You know, and I was like, I don't remember anything that she said to me, but she seemed nice, and I needed to get a sponsor who was a woman who had over a year to, like, you know, check off the boxes at rehab. And so, apparently, I actually never asked her to sponsor me. She says that I had just said, I'd asked her, like, "So how long do you have sober, and I'm in rehab, and I need a sponsor." And I left it there, and she was like, "Do you want me to sponsor you?" And I was like, "Okay." And so, she's still my sponsor today, you know, So she scooped me up and took me to meetings. She picked me up from rehab, like, almost every night. She took me to meetings every day, and I listened to people, and I related to people like I never related to anybody else in my life, you know. And when I was drinking, I would try to tell people things I did and things I said, and think maybe you'll relate a little bit, and maybe I'm not so crazy and so weird, and maybe there's not something so terribly wrong with me. And, but everybody just gave me a weird look and backed off, you know, and was like, "I don't know what's wrong with you, but you need to go somewhere else," you know. But in AA, people were like, "Oh, yeah, I did that too, blah, 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 I did that 3 times, you only did it twice, whatever, it's not a big deal." And so I felt like that's totally comfortable, and people drank the way that I drank, and they understood the reasoning of "I don't know" made sense to them, just like it made sense to me. And so I was like, this could be okay, you know. But I had a desire to stop drinking, but I wasn't willing to do AA, really. And so I was willing to go to the meetings and to get out of trouble, but I kept thinking maybe there's another way I could do this, you know what I mean? Like, maybe I could just drink and not get in trouble. You know, maybe I could drink and not want to kill myself. I don't know. You know, maybe we'll figure this out. I'm smart. You know, I'll put two and two together and get a new solution for this. And I relapsed a couple of times. And I went, I would, like, you know, meet up with my friends from rehab and be like, "Oh, I know a really good drinking spot." And, like, lie to my sponsor and be like, "Oh, no, don't pick me up. I'm grounded. I can't go." Or, you know, "I'm getting a meeting with a ride with so-and-so." And she always had, like, AA spies and knew the person, you know. And she was like, she didn't really give me a ride, you know. But she would just let me do it. It was like, whatever, you know. She'd catch me on some stuff. And so I'd try to be a little more slick with it, you know. And, you know, but I would, like, not go to the meeting. And I went out with these kids and showed them my old drinking spots. And they got bottles of Mad Dog. And we went out and sat around in a circle. And they handed it to me. And I drank a sip off of it. And then my pager went off. And I was like, I think I had a phone at the time. And I was like, "Oh, it's my mom. I'm a responsible, sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to go home when my mother calls me." And I went home, you know. And, like, I just drank. And I was like, whatever, you know. But I didn't get drunk. And so I, like, just blocked it out of my memory. Like, it had never happened. And then a couple of months later, I was out I drank another time in between that I have no recollection of other than a crazy letter I wrote to my whole family apologizing for me. And so I think I drank another time in there, but I blacked it out. And then the last drink that I had was I went to a meeting and apparently, like, fought with my sponsor. And I don't remember that, but apparently I was screaming at her outside the meeting and, like, told everybody I was grounded and had to go home. It was Saturday night. And so I walked home. I wouldn't let anybody give me a ride. And I walked to the metro and went home. And I sat on the metro. And I literally started drooling because I knew I'm going to get messed up tonight. Because this girl that I was in rehab with had, like, given me a couple of pills. And I locked them away in my room and told myself, if you don't take them, then you're fine. You have power over this. So I didn't take them for 2 days. And then I was drooling and thought, now I can take it because I have power over it and I'm fine. And so I went home and I crushed these up in a line, and I started right when I went to snort him, I thought, you don't need to do this, and then I finished the line. And my next thought was, there's a bottle of wine in the basement, and I had to drink it. Like, the strongest compulsion I'd ever had came over me. Because I guess prior to that, you know, a lot of alcoholics come in AA, and they're like, oh, I never really had compulsions. It's because we always drank, and we had them, you know? And so I was sitting in my room thinking, I gotta get this. And I went down, and I sneaked down to the basement, you know, and my parents occasionally would have bottles of wine, and for some reason I knew they had one. And I snuck down to the basement, and I got it, and I guess I put it under my shirt or something, I don't know, and snuck back up to my room, and I get it, and then I'm like, there's a cork in this damn thing. How do you get it out? Because I didn't drink wine. I drank, like, Mad Dog and, like, straight vodka and, like, whiskey and 40s. I didn't drink wine, and so I didn't understand how to get the cork out. So I went and I got a corkscrew, snuck back up to my room, trying to use it, and I can't get it to come out, you know? And so I went back down, I got a knife, and I came back up, and I just cut the cork out, you know what I mean? And I cut it out, and I jammed it in the bottle, and I drank it. I was like, I have to get this in me. And I sat in my room and cried, drunk, and thought, you can't even stop drinking. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. There's no way that you can stop drinking. You have tried. The last 6 months you've been in AA, telling everybody you got 5.5 months sober, you know, and you can't stop drinking. Here you are again. And I was just a mess, you know, and I went back. But I knew, like, that night I got a first, second, and third step, like, the beginnings of them. I knew that I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable. I mean, obviously. It was just very clear to me at that moment that I couldn't not drink. And I also knew that I wouldn't be able to do it without help from people in AA. And that was the beginning of a second step, because AA was my first higher power, and it's the only power greater than myself that I thought I might be able to work for me. And I knew if I went to the meeting, it was like touching home base, you know what I mean? I'd be safe. I'd be okay. Like, I wasn't going to drink in the meeting, and if I'm around people in AA, I'm probably not going to drink, and I'm going to be okay. You know, and I was willing, my beginning of my third step is I was willing to just go and do whatever they said. You know what I mean? And so I went to the meeting. I had a service position. That was Saturday night. Midtown, so the next day I had a service position as a greeter. So I showed up and I greeted. Didn't tell anybody I drank, but I greeted. And because I didn't want to not be there for my service position, because I felt like the meeting meant more to me, you know. And not only was it my homework, but I had service there, and thank God for that, you know, and that's really one of the important things about service. But, you know, it brought me right back to the meeting. I was there early, I was talking to people, you know, and then a couple of days later on a Wednesday, I called somebody in AA and told them I drank. And he was like, you need to call your sponsor. I'm not equipped to deal with this. You know what I mean? And so I called my sponsor and I told her what was going on. And I just sat in the meeting that night and I cried. You know, and I knew it was done. And I picked up my 24-hour chip, and that's it. I picked up a couple more that week, and then I haven't had to pick up any more since. And I'm really, really grateful for that, because that really wasn't my doing. It's really, really clear to me now from working with other drunk said that really wasn't my doing. You know, I had willingness, yeah, but I had a window to walk through to get sober, and I went and I went to the meetings. I read the book with my sponsor, you know, and I was totally blown away when I was reading the doctor's opinion, and it says that alcoholics are the only people that crave alcohol. And I was like, no. I always had no idea, you know. I figured everybody, you know, does, because why wouldn't you, you know? And I was so surprised, and I learned a lot about what alcoholism was, and I just related all over the place. And everywhere I read, I was like, oh, that's me, and it was just, like, shocking, you know? And I went to meetings a lot. I went to meetings every day with my sponsor, sometimes 2 a.m., and I went, met a lot of people in AA and hung out with a lot of people in AA, and it was like a constant thing, you know, and I started getting active, and I did my 4-step at my sponsor's kitchen table, because she wouldn't let me write it by myself because I get too in my head about it, and like every 15 minutes I'd ask her a question, and I was so afraid to do it wrong, you know, but I did try to get out of it a little bit. Like, I would go over there after school, and I left my book at home one day and was like, oops, I can't come over right before step, sorry. And she's like, well, just get it and we'll do it tomorrow. and I was like, shit, you know, and, but I finished it, I wrote it, and then we went to this diner, and, that you could smoke in, and we just sat there and smoked, and I read my, did my fist up with her and read my inventory to her. And I had a hard time with, writing down everybody and seeing my part was the hardest part. I mean, of course it is, but I, had all these blanks, you know what I mean? And so a lot of the conversation with my sponsor was, well, so I'm mad at my mom, I threatened to kill her, you know what I mean, I pushed her or whatever, you know what I mean, I threw a telephone at her head, and, you know, she's always in my way, trying to stop me from doing things, whatever it was, and then I have no idea what my part is. She's just a bitch, I don't get it, you know what I mean, and so, and like, well, they were mean, or whatever it was, they're trying to stop me from getting my way, or, and then my sponsor would say, well, what happened before they did that, you know, and I'd say, well, I did this, but it's not really relevant, and she's like, oh, yeah, it is, you know, so I write that in, and I learned to actually stop and look at myself, which was a completely foreign concept to me, like, the idea of, like, anything that I did, if you had a reaction to it, it was your reaction, therefore your problem, not mine, you know, and I said, if you take offense to anything that I do or say, you're the one who takes offense to it. Sorry, I'm just being me, you know, and that doesn't fly in the real world, and so, you know, I learned how to take it, look at myself like that, and that's been such an important tool for me, just to be able to stop and look at it, and it's gotten so that I'm, you know, I'm good at it now. I take daily 10 steps, well, no, not really, I write a 10 step a couple times a week, I call my sponsor with my inventory, but I don't always write it down, and, but I can see myself, you know what I mean? I can. It gets quicker, and so I can stop in the middle of taking a wrong action and do it. And so I started doing steps, you know, and then after my fifth step, I just was like, cool, I'm going to coast, you know, and a lot of people do that. And I coasted right into a compulsion, and I ended up like 18 months sober, crazy, and sitting in meetings thinking about drinking, and I was literally holding onto my chair, and I just freaked out, and I didn't understand what had happened, you know what I mean, and it's, active alcoholism is still there, regardless if I'm drinking or not, you know, and it's still gonna, the, like, inability to live sober is the root of it, you know, drinking is a symptom of it, but the inability to live is the root of it, and so I couldn't see that, and but having a compulsion really cleared my eyes up to see it, you know, and so, and I'm grateful I didn't drink, you know, and I got back into doing step work and stuff with my sponsor, and that was really hard. The 6 and 7 steps were not easy steps, and it made me crazy, and it's really hard to change because I can't do it myself, you know what I mean, and the willingness to be able to change is not easy to get to. And I've had plenty of, like, I'm driving on the highway with the windows down, screaming, God, why? You know what I mean? Like, take this! And sometimes I just need that, you know? And, you know, and I've been, I'm, like, running out of time. But I've had really amazing life sober. And there's plenty of ups and downs, you know? Like, when I had, like, 9 months sober, my mom got breast cancer, you know, and my sponsor was like, it's not you, you're not sick, go help your mom, you know, and so it didn't have to be this, like, self-centered, what am I going to do, which is amazing, because I had 9 months sober, I'm massively self-centered even today, and so, and the fact that I could show up for her, you know what I mean, and laugh with her and have fun, and she's just, you know, just in great spirits the whole time, you know, it was like, so awesome that I could be there and be her daughter and help, you know, help out with that. And, you know, I got to went to college sober, graduated sober, I got to study abroad, and I moved to England for a couple of months with two friends in AA, and, got a home group there, you know, and I greeted there, and they didn't understand what greeting was, because that meeting didn't do it, and so I was like, come on now, you know, and they're like, well, you're Americans, you must know. So I always liked that, and, you know, but we'd be like, well, this is what Guru does, and so my friends and I would just stand out front and shake everybody's hand. Hi, welcome to the meeting. Hi, welcome to the meeting. You know, it's a beginner's meeting. I loved it. I got to watch this guy when I first started going to meetings there. He had, like, a week. And by the time I left, he had or he had a couple weeks. By the time I left, he picked up his 3-month chip. And I was so grateful to see that, you know. And it really taught me a lot that I cannot depend on the fellowship of AA to keep me sober, because it's really, really easy. You know, it's easy when it's easy. It's easy when my friends are at the meeting or my boyfriend's there or the people that I'm hanging out with are all going anyway, you know. And it's easy when my sponsor's right there and I'll see her at the meeting even if I don't call her, you know. And if that I have plenty of friends who will point out if I'm acting out on a defect, you know what I mean? But living that far away from my sponsor and having daily email contact with her, I needed to really take my inventory. I was living with two other people who would tell me if I'm going to mess up, you know what I mean? But I had to really learn. Sometimes they would work late, and I would be going to the meeting by myself, and I'd have to stick my hand out and be a newcomer all over again and say, hi, I'm new to this meeting. You know, like, where's a good meeting to go to? Like, do you guys go and hang out for coffee? And I made a lot of good friends there, and that was awesome, you know? But it really, really made me get a higher power that I could take with me other places, and that wasn't my home group, you know? Because my home group's just people. The power of Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely there, but I can still stay sober regardless of where I am or what I'm doing, you know? And I do feel more centered, you know, when I'm with people that I know in a comfortable meeting, of course. You know what I mean? It's comfortable. But going and doing something that's uncomfortable really builds character and really builds my sobriety like that. And so I'm really grateful for those experiences that I've had. I guess that's that for me, because I'll just talk forever. If I don't shut up now, I might as well. So I guess thank you so much for asking me to come out and speak. And thanks. Okay.